It's been great. Everything's going to be great right now. You know, like I've said it to our guys, and I'll say it to you guys, that the true character of everybody in this building will be revealed in adversity. And right now, things are good. Everyone feels good. Everyone's receptive. Everyone's paying attention, and there's a lot of good dialogue. And right now is a great opportunity to build that trust. And there'll be bumps in the road, and it'll be exciting to see how those interactions take place when that happens.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, the publisher at NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, the Yada Yada King, Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing? Happy Friday.
I'm doing well, doing better now that you hit me with the Yada Yada King label. I did have a hot mic incident, as pointed out by Hershey here to start the show. There could be worse hot mic incidents, I'll just say that. People have lost their jobs over hot mic incidents. This will not be of that variety. We'll talk about it a little later.
Justin, when I say 3, 2, 1, here we go. It's like imminent. Any second after that, maybe it's not immediately 3, 2, 1. We're live, but that's just a function of our streaming program that takes a second to spin when I hit go live, and it takes maybe 5 seconds to actually be live. When I've done the countdown, it's over. No more talking. But it's fine. It's fine.
Justin, I knew I was playing with fire. My shirt was on. It wasn't that bad. You know, it was all right.
You were trying to remind me to remind the audience a little bit about today's schedule. Let's just talk about it really quick because Robert Saleh literally just finished speaking moments before we went live today. The Titans are taking the field for their second open OTA practice, their sixth overall out of 10 OTA practice of the spring offseason period. And you were telling me, Justin, don't forget to tell our audience about what's coming later today. Here's the thing. The timing of this practice, not ideal for our show. They will be on the field. This is per Jim Wyatt in a direct message to you that they will be on the field from 11:15 to 12:30. Is that right? Robert Saleh speaking before practice. I guess they won't take the field for 45 minutes, or maybe they do 45 minutes a stretch. I don't know. I'm not out there. I'm not sure what's going on. Regardless, Justin, you and I, we didn't want to delay the Friday live stream, 10:30 a.m. Central hangout, standard time. Like, we didn't want to push this show because the Titans have a weird practice schedule, but we also don't want to wait until Monday to recap a practice that's happening in an hour or so. So we decided, you guys get a double, you guys get a bonus today, you guys get a twofer. We're going to come back on and do a second show after the Titans OTA practice wraps up, recap everybody's observations. Again, shout out to the Nashville beat, all the people on the beat in the media who are out there at practice covering it and who will have all these observations that we can then react to and analyze. So excited. We're getting you guys get two shows in one day. This is the first one. We'll talk about Saleh's press conference. We'll talk about what we want to see from this OTA practice. We'll respond to your guys' questions and chat messages. And we'll do a show here that we probably won't go 70 minutes this time because, you know, we usually go pretty long on Fridays with this hangout session. But because we'll be back on in not too long, we'll keep this one a little bit shorter, save some of our thoughts for the post-practice chat. Justin, sound like a plan?
Sound like a good plan to me. We'll be live again, as you said, later today. No hard time, but you can, you know, once practice is wrapped up and we've gathered enough notes from player performances, as you said, based on the beat writers who will be there at practice kind of summarizing things. We'll go live again and talk about what actually happened. As you noted, sixth OTA practice, so they're about at the halfway point. They get 10 in total. This is only the second one that's been open to the media. And I noted to you in a text message, after today, they're going on a bit of a break. They don't have their next practice until, what is it, June 8th, I believe I texted you. I think it's June 8th and June 9th. And yeah, then June 11 and June 12. Those would be the final four OTA practices before they have a two-day mandatory mini camp later in June, which I believe is scheduled for the 16th and 17th. And then that's it. They'll break for summer, and the next time they'll be together will be at training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will have to manufacture some content between now and June 8th, but that won't be a problem for us. I've got so many topics in the well that I'm ready to dig out and get to. But before we get into what we want to talk about today, Justin, let's start off. Oh my goodness gracious. With this super chat from Gary Soto, not just $50, Justin, $55.55. For two live shows. Now, Gary, nobody's expecting you to make two $50 donations today. I'm not going to complain if you want to do that. That's up to you. I mean, you go talk to your mom and see how that credit card bill looks. But, Gary, we really appreciate the support and the super chat here, consistently helping us out.
I need to know more about the 55-55. Is that the interest from the $49.99 when he shorted us 1 cent last week? Was there like a $5 or $6? Whatever it is, I'm bad at math, $5.55 interest or whatever it is. Gary, all kidding aside, we appreciate the heck out of you. This comment had me in tears here. I need to know what Gary's other interests are so I can start a related podcast. Gary, if you're into fly fishing, Graver and I are going to learn everything there is to do about, everything there is to know about fly fishing, and we're going to start a fly fishing podcast. Or maybe the real spoiler alert: do we think Gary is Graver's in-laws from Switzerland?
I do not. I definitely do not. He made some investments, so he has a little more to donate. That's pretty insane return if 1 cent ends up netting you $5.56. I mean, that's pretty monstrous. But Justin, let's get into some conversation here. I think we should start right off the bat. Robert Sala, like I said, just finished speaking. Like, literally 8 minutes ago, he was speaking, and now he is done. So, Justin, some of the things that stood out, it was, I'll be honest with everybody, a little bit boring of a press conference, but it's nice to hear him talk and say some things about some people. And I think one of the things that stood out to me, the first thing that stood out to me, was Paul Kaharski had a good question asking about the rotation of the defensive line. Basically asked him, like, I think the first part of the question was, how do you convince these guys that this is best? That a guy like Jeffrey Simmons, this goes back to the conversation we had not too long ago about the rotation of the D-line. I think that was the Femi episode on Tuesday of this week. Asking, how do you convince Jeffrey Simmons that playing less is actually better and that there may be some key downs where he's not on the field? And Robert Saleh basically said, well, the idea behind him playing less is so that when those key downs come up, he is on the field. And he said, we got to get our horses out there when it matters most. So those third downs rushing, we want to make sure we got Jeffrey, John Franklin Myers. Who else did he mention? Jermaine, Jacob, and Femi. He included Femi in the group of horses, which I thought was slightly notable. Maybe he just doesn't want to leave anybody out, but he did leave Keldrick Falk out and, you know, I guess Jalen Harrell. But he didn't leave Femi out. So that was interesting to me. And then Paul followed up by saying, like, have you done the studies like that show like where the drop-off point is, where they're playing too much point is? And Saleh had a very interesting response to that. I'm sure they've done studies on what percent of snaps is an ideal rate. But his response was, if you can play four plays in a row in our system with what we're asking you to do, you're doing something wrong. So Wow. That's that. I mean, we knew there'd be a lot of rotation. Four plays in a row, that's a ton of rotation, Justin.
It sounds, yeah, I mean, he basically said four plays in a row is too much and we don't want to do it. And if we are doing it, you're not doing something right, which I took to mean, like, interpretation-wise, and I think I'm right here, you're not playing hard enough. This is an aggressive attacking style defense that asks a lot of you from a conditioning perspective and whatnot, right? So if you're able to do four plays in a row, you're not doing it right. And what I thought of immediately is, we talked about the other day, Jeffrey Simmons, when he was on the field last year, playing 85, 92, 93% of snaps. I mean, if you're coming off the field every four plays, I mean, do the math, which I shouldn't ask you to do live because I can't do it either. But 60 defensive plays, right? If you're not even doing four in a row, right? Like, it's nowhere near an 85 to 90% snap share that Jeffrey Simmons was used to last season, for example.
Yeah, but I do think it's nice that, you know, sure, you may give up a big play on first down because you got four backups in the game or something, but the idea is twofold. Number one, that even those four backups are all quality or at least solid, reliable players. And I think they have built a stable of players on that defensive front that qualify as, you know, guys you can at least get away with playing on the field together without, if Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers and Jermaine Johnson and whoever the other starting end is, Keldrick Falk, Jacob Martin, Femi Ladeja, whoever it ends up being, if all four of those guys are not on the field at the same time, like, you're okay for a play or two with the rest of the guys. They're like replacement level or above replacement level. They're not like unproven UDFAs or total backups or guys who wouldn't make other rosters. Like, there's some guys that could potentially be starters on other weaker rosters in that group. So I'm okay with that. And then you ensure that on that, when it's third and three at midfield and you like, you need a stop here, you got your best four on the field and they're fresh and they're ready to get after the quarterback or stop the run. And, you know, on a situation like that where it's not an obvious passing down, but could be a run scenario because it's a short, you know, short line to gain near midfield, like, and maybe they go, maybe they're planning to go for forward on fourth down if they don't get it kind of situation. And you want to make a play in those situations. You want to have your best four on the field, but not just on the field, fresh and rested and ready to give it 110%. So I like it. I mean, we've seen his approach work at countless places as a defensive coordinator or on the defensive staff. And I'm glad they're bringing that to Tennessee. And I think it's going to be an effective way to get after opposing offenses.
That's why he brings in guys like Jacob Martin and Jordan Elliott and Solomon Thomas, all three of which he's coached before, right? Yeah. Either in New York or San Francisco, so that he can trust them to be those rotational guys. And they'll also be familiar with how the rotation works and the system and the scheme and what's asked of them. I think before I move on to the next part of the next interesting thing he said, can we hit Nash Rust over here?
Oh my goodness gracious.
With the $20 super chat tip, very generous of you, Nash Rust. He says, JG, addressing you directly, thought you might need some cash in your pocket now that you're married. Yes, there's no doubt about it. Graver, now a married man. All new costs, you know, coming with that. And he's also got to be really nice to the wife, the official wife now. So he's got to have a little couple extra bucks in his pocket. Mother's Day, you know, Mother's Day one day, he's got to be able to buy flowers and things of that nature. So the donation is very much appreciated, Nash Rust.
So true. Thank you so much, Nash Rust, for supporting the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. We appreciate you. If you're tuning in to this live stream, hit the like button, hype the video, subscribe to the channel, drop a comment, but also comment in the live chat, but also like comment on the actual video, not just in the live chat, because we love the live chat. It helps us keep this show going. But the thing that helps the show grow is comments on the actual video. Justin, did you know this? Titans DB / safety coach Marquand Manuel spoke, and Titans QB coach Shea Tierney is speaking now. We're not watching those because we're live, but we can watch those before our second show of the day and react to anything interesting that they may say. Our first time hearing, if I'm not mistaken, from either of these position coaches. Yeah. And pretty cool, I think, from a fan perspective, that we get to hear from Shea Tierney, who's coaching Cam Ward. I hope that somebody asks him about virtual reality. I haven't heard a peep about virtual reality all offseason. I might have to send a bug to Easton to ask a question. Is anyone still using VR in this building? Because I'm still super hyped about the potential of what that can do.
I don't mind if they abandon everything Brian Callahan brought to the team.
Fair.
I mean, Brian Callahan's virtual reality head coaching elsewhere this year. And I don't mind if the virtual reality, maybe he brought it with him. You know, you're angry clearing out your desk after, maybe he threw the thing in his box. You know, every time you get fired, you leave with a little box. That's been on every TV show since I was a kid. When he's taking his box, puts the photo of him and Joe Burrow from his desk, puts it in the box, and then he threw the VR machine in the box as well. And yeah. It's no longer in the building. But no, that's interesting. Wow. I'm definitely curious to watch Shea Tierney and Marquand Manuel speak. And as you noted,
and Aaron Whitecotton is apparently just started speaking himself.
That's a really good one. Definitely going to watch those three. Before we do the later today show, as we noted, if you guys are just tuning in, the number in the chat's higher than it's ever been. We are doing a second live show later today once practice wraps up, once we've got notes from practice. Who played well? Who didn't play well? What did Aaron Whitecotton say? Depth chart movement? Anything that happens, we will be on here today for a second live stream to talk about the Titans' second open OTA practice.
Before you get to that, just quickly playing with the chat here. Adam says Easton is having a rough morning. Jordan says, at Adam, what happened with Easton? Missed the presser. Stingray, yeah, spill the beans, Adam. I too am curious as to what happened with Easton. So while Adam takes a second to write up his answer to that, Justin. The next thing Robert Saleh said that caught your intrigue.
Yeah, minor update on Nick Singleton, rookie running back out of Penn State. You might remember broke his foot at the Senior Bowl, obviously really complicated his pre-draft process. Titans end up getting him in the fifth round, I believe it was. Yeah. Their second of two fifth-round picks. They took Fernando Carmona with their first. Robert Saleh asked for an injury update on Nick Singleton. He said he's progressing and he'll be doing some team reps for the first time today. So that'll be Nick Singleton. Some level of participation at practice today. Good to hear that he's progressing.
It was about the no turnovers versus no injuries thing. This was interesting, Justin. So this came up originally, and shout out to A to Z Sports for bringing this conversation more to the forefront. But I actually was running some errands, Wednesday morning for our show, Justin, when it was pouring down rain here in Dallas, listening to the Athletic Football Show. And they did a mailbag episode, and this came up in a weird way where they were talking about something else, and then Robert Mays was like, this reminds me of a question I'd ask some coaches. Would you rather go a full season with no turnovers or no injuries? A to Z Sports had this conversation, I think, on their show. They even wrote about it. And at the last question Robert Saleh answered in his presser was this question. Would you rather go a full, if you could erase one or turn one off for the season, would you rather do no injuries or no turnovers? Now, this poll, I think Austin posted this on Twitter as a poll. I initially, without thinking really, just tapped no injuries. Because, like, as a fan, one of the biggest crushing moments of a season is when your star player goes down with injury, right? And we've seen that as Titans fans. I've seen that in every sport I've ever cheered for. Somebody gets hurt, and it's heartbreaking in the moment. But then you really start thinking about it, and you're like, okay, yeah, no turnovers is clearly and obviously the right answer. If you go a whole season without turning the ball over, you're winning at least 10 games. Even with the worst roster in the NFL, you're winning at least 10 games. And you're probably winning 14 or 15 if you don't turn the ball over for an entire season. Robert Saleh answered this question at the end of his presser. He said, no turnovers. They asked him why. And he said, well, look, you know, injuries happen. But to me, the single biggest determinant of wins or losses in the NFL is turnovers. And there's years and years of data that support that. He goes, we were one of the most injured teams in the NFL last year with the Niners, and we still won 13 games. So I would definitely take no turnovers. You can overcome injuries. More guys get opportunity to show what they can do. But turnovers, unless you're forcing them yourself, it's really hard to overcome a high number of turnovers. So I don't know. I don't know where Easton and Austin came down on this, or if this is why Easton's having a bad morning. But
Easton's computer kept crashing on the live show. He kept in and out. That's what it was about, I guess.
Okay, I see. Well, it was an interesting debate regardless, Justin. I don't know if you had thoughts on it.
You know what? I kind of liked that the question was asked. Kind of a fun, lighthearted question to end the presser with. And listen, he lost Bosa and Michael Williams, all his pass rushers, to season-ending injuries last year. Granted, they did have the fewest sacks in the NFL last season as a result, but they won 13 games, as he noted. I believe they allowed the 13th fewest points per game in the NFL, like 20-ish, 21 points per game. So even with all those injuries, they navigated that pretty well, right? All things considered. So I get it. The no turnovers thing, when you look into it, and roster grids, our buddy FKA, formerly Iron Grids, mentioned here in the chat that he did some surface level digging, and definitely fewer turnovers adds more wins. So nice to see Robert Saleh on the right side of history.
Yeah, I actually did some scatter plotting this is maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, but I was trying to determine what is the single biggest indicator of wins or losses. What is the highest correlation to wins? And it's definitely turnovers, there's no question. But I looked at things like points per game, points allowed per game, passing yards per game, rushing yards per game, et cetera, et cetera. And the number two factor that I came up with, I believe, was passing yards per game, with rushing yards per game way, way down on the list. Passing in the NFL, actually, I don't think that was right. I think it was passer rating, because passing yards per game actually is an indicator of losing because you're trying to chase a score, but passer rating means that you're being very efficient with your passes. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Other things Robert Saleh talked about before we get into what we're looking for from this practice. I think that Cam Ward's attitude was an interesting one. This is something that we kind of know about him, that we've seen on tape. If you go back to Miami a couple of plays, that he has, I would call maybe a nonchalant approach, maybe just to life in general, but certainly to everything football related. That's not to say he doesn't take it seriously, that he's not emotional, fired up, celebratory when he does well, and pissed off when he does poorly. I think he is all of those things, but there is an element of nonchalantness to his approach, to his demeanor. There's one rep from Miami that stands out in my mind, and I'm sure everyone who did any amount of draft prep or watched Cam Ward after the Titans picked him will remember the play where I think it was Iowa State game, the Pop-Tart Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am mistaken. Let me know in the chat. Where he takes the snap, looks around, nobody's open, pocket is incredible, protection is amazing, and he eventually just completely comes to a flat standstill and finally checks it down to the running back without even moving his feet at all. That kind of nonchalant approach, right? Robert Saleh said, the way he worded it was, Cam has give two shits attitude, excuse my language, that's what Saleh said. But, you know, he has the ability to forget a mistake quickly and move on to the next play, which is a good quality you want to have. You know, have the memory of a goldfish, as Ted Lasso would say. And I think that is, like, we've seen that, and I think it's interesting that Saleh's pointing it out from the sense of, like, a give two craps attitude. Like, he doesn't give a crap. But also that, like, he can understand that he made a mistake and not let that affect him going forward onto the next play. A great trait you want your quarterback to have, bouncing back from a bad play, bouncing back from an interception, etc. And we saw that a little last year too.
Important trait for a quarterback, right? When they start getting into their heads after a mistake, and things can spiral, right? Especially at that position. I think it's the most important position when it comes to forgetting quickly. That and cornerback, I would probably argue, is number two. But certainly, yeah, one of those guys, as Stingray says, never gets too high, never gets too low. I think that's exactly what you want to see out of your quarterback. In terms of what we're looking for, Graver, why don't we take a quick break and then come for the audio audience, of course. We're not going anywhere for the video audience, and then come back and talk about this second OTA practice.
Yes, be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, before we dive into the topic at hand, let's hit a couple of chat questions that we starred from earlier. Just Call Me Whopper says, I gotta know what the angry Canadian thinks about the Drake album, parentheses albums, let me know. Now, I'm not up to date on the latest here. Did Drake drop like three albums in one night or something crazy like that?
Yeah, he dropped three albums across three different genres, like a hip-hop album, an R&B album, and I don't know what you'd even call the other one, like a EDM, house music, dance, whatever, like poppy kind of whatever.
Is there an element of you're doing too much, Drake? To that, or are you on board with this kind of
there's
approach?
A rumor that he did it to get out of his contract, which I find funny if true, because he owed the label three. I mean, it's the same label he's like suing, I think, over the Kendrick Lamar thing, and he owed them three albums on his deal, so that would be pretty funny if so. Call Me Whopper, I'll say this, I really like the hip-hop album. I think it's one of his better hip-hop albums in recent memory. I'd put it right below Nothing Was the Same and Take Care. It might be the third best Drake solo album. I don't care so much. I'm not a big like R&B or EDM guy. So I listened to the other albums once all the way through because that's the type of fan I am. But I've had the hip hop album pretty much on repeat since it came out.
Justin, just so you know, Carmen Brasillo is speaking now. So we got four position coaches lined up that we're going to have to dig through after this. Maybe when the quiet period coming up, we can we'll focus on the highlights today and on Monday too. Maybe we can do like a getting to know series on these position coaches and like go deeper on each of these press conferences. I don't know, just a thought. Maybe let us know if you have any interest in that in the chat. One more thing I wanted to hit before we move on, Justin. Atlas, when we go back to the Easton combo we just had, Atlas says, maybe he's referring to Easton acting like the only human to ever experience a flight delay yesterday. Now, look, I know some people on Twitter saw Easton tweeting it. I think it was Delta. I don't want to dox the wrong airline here. But anyway, some airline that Easton's wife was trying to take with their baby was just like a terrible, terrible delay situation. And Easton took to Twitter. Now, some people were like, Easton, well, don't be that guy taking this to Twitter. Look, I feel the complete opposite way. If you have any sizable semblance of a following on Twitter and you get wronged by a company and they won't listen to you when you try to call the company directly, take it to social media. Absolutely utilize your platform. I've gotten free stuff out of this before. This was years ago, but I had a Southwest Airlines situation where nobody's doing anything at Southwest. I tweet about it. Suddenly I get a DM. It's like, here's a voucher. Like this, you should absolutely do this if you ever have the opportunity. And I support Easton fully. And I liked his tweet just to help it like get a little bit better for his fight against, I think, I want to say it was Delta Airline, if I'm wrong about the airline.
Someone said American Air. Rye School said it was American Air in the comments.
Oh, maybe it was American. I don't know.
I mean, listen, I'm usually like not a huge fan of that behavior. Well, we're all agree here is I hate airlines. They're like the worst. I don't know that there's anything worse in terms of company-wide than airlines. I used to work in that industry for a little bit, so I know how hard they gouge people and just totally make up prices and do whatever the heck they want. Now you got to pay. You can't even go to Europe without a bag anymore. Now you got to pay for baggage. Like you expect me to go to Europe without a bag, right? Like they're just always finding new ways to screw us over, essentially. So I cannot stand the airline business. So anything that makes them look bad, I think I'm in favor of. And I agree. Like a lot of times they won't listen to you. And if you have a platform and you can use it to catch their attention, I don't blame anyone. I don't think Drake's a Texans fan, Stingray. I'll say this. His dad is from Memphis, Tennessee. And fun fact, I don't know why I remember this, but there's a music video where he wears a really sweet Houston Oilers throwback, like varsity jacket. I remember it catching my attention, obviously, because I'm a Titans fan. And he shot a couple videos in Tennessee with local Tennessee rappers like, you know, 36 Mafia, Juicy J, Project Pat, wearing Tennessee Titans gear in their music videos. In Drake's music.
Here's the thing about Drake, though, is that he is a massive bandwagoner and will go wherever the winning is happening. Remember, he was at the Toronto because he's from Canada or whatever. He was at
NBA. He's from Toronto. If he's a huge Toronto Raptors fan. What do you mean
He was a huge Toronto Raptors fan when they were in the NBA Finals. Where has he been lately, you know? Just like he's a Kentucky fan and a Duke fan, depending on which team is better any given year, which is just insanity. So I would like Drake to stay as far away from my teams personally as possible. But that's neither here nor there. I just respond to this because Atlas came back. He says, I'd feel yucky using social media following to get benefits the average Joe can't. Like, I get what you're saying, but it's not about getting benefits the average Joe can't. It's just about, like, utilizing every avenue in life to right a wrong if you've been wronged. So,
yeah,
I mean,
unfortunately,
if you can do
Atlas,
it, do
I, like, where I agree with Graver is, like, the world's not perfect, and these companies will not listen to you at all unless you try to force them to, and that's one way you can successfully force them to. You're right, not everyone has that access, but guess what, celebrities live better lives than us too.
All right, Clay Thompson over Drake, says Jordan Amos. I'm literally wearing a Mavs shirt today, so
big Titans fan Clay Thompson.
That's right, that is right. Okay, enough jibber jabber. Justin, OTAs, Titans back on the field. Can't wait to see how practice goes. Can't wait to go listen to the four position coaches that spoke today and their press conferences. But our schedule means that we didn't get to do that. Oh, wow. Randy Jordan also speaking, Justin.
Jesus.
Five position coaches. I mean, I'm going to be spending every second from the time this show ends to the time our next show begins listening to these. It's too many Titans. Like, lay these out one a day so you and I can do a whole episode on each one as opposed to having to take the top comment from each one. Anyway, OTAs hitting the field again today. I'll be interested to see guys like Nick Singleton, who, you know, you mentioned earlier, Robert Saleh said will be taking part in team drills for the first time. How many other guys are making progress in a return from injury, or that will be back on the field, or the guys that just weren't on the field last Thursday for whatever reason, Memorial Day weekend, end of the week, whatever. Like, who's back on the field today? I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see as many guys out there as possible. Obviously, I get it. It's a optional period and it's not really that important and it's Robert Sala last week called it basically a passing camp because there's no contact allowed. but the passing camp, to me, as a fan of a team with a second-year quarterback that we all hope takes a huge leap, like, I love that it's just a passing camp. I'd rather it just be a passing camp this time of year.
No doubt about it. And as we have, sorry, we've got 115 people in here, the highest number of people we've had in here. So a quick note, again, if you missed it, up to 117. We're going live again today for a second time after practice. One of the first times we've ever done that, I believe, with live updates following practice, letting you guys know, you know, obviously thanks to some of the blog, the beat writers in attendance, who played well. Did Cardale Tate have three touchdowns again? What was Cam Ward's completion percentage? We'll be live a second time later today, just in a couple hours, shortly, to talk about what actually happened at this second OTA practice that we are currently previewing right now.
That's right, Justin. And one of the other things I'm looking at is, like, can Carnell Tate, obviously we talked about this yesterday, can Carnell Tate continue to show that he can hit the ground running as a rookie? But more than that, can this entire receiver group, the room, the whole lot of them, can they go out there and show that they are one of the league's most improved units? Because Carnell Tate's great, and we're happy to have him, and we hope he does well, but he's still a rookie. You don't want to put too much pressure on a rookie to come in and be the savior of a position group. You asked Cam Ward to come in and be the savior of your entire offense last year. Obviously, that didn't go very well, especially when the rest of the team continuously let him down in key spots, whether it was the pass protection or receivers dropping balls or whatever other situation, penalties, all the things that went wrong last year. You don't want Carnell Tate to have the whole weight of the passing game on his shoulders either. So is Wandale Robinson going to prove that he's worth the massive contract he signed this offseason? Can Calvin Ridley bounce back now that he is also in a role that has much less pressure on him? Can the rookies from last year, who are now second-year players, take a step forward and become real great contributors to an offense now that their position on the depth chart and the pecking order is more maybe appropriate to their talent level? Or maybe they prove that they are better than the draft slot they were picked at, and they continue to earn more playing time. Justin, Ben Solak wrote an article for ESPN recently. This was published, this morning. And it was the 10 biggest position group upgrades across the entire NFL. And he has the Titans receivers as the fourth biggest upgrade behind the Washington Commanders linebackers, the Las Vegas Raiders linebackers, and the Arizona Cardinals running backs. Titans receivers is the fourth biggest upgrade of any position group across the entire league, according to Ben Solak, with the additions of Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson and the loss of Van Jefferson. Do you agree with this, first of all? And secondly, do you agree with me that the receivers need to step up?
Well, I do think this is a much improved unit, right? And like, who's going to be the number one receiver on offense this year? I actually do think it'll be Carnell Tate. Who's going to be number two? It's going to be Wandale Robinson. So if both of your top performing wideouts are new acquisitions, then yeah, that is a much improved group. And of course, you know, the returning players don't count towards this. But while we're on this topic, it's like, can they get more out of Calvin Ridley this year than they got last year? Probably. He started off really disappointing and he suffered a season-ending injury like the seventh game or sixth game, whatever it was. And then you got the sophomores, you know, Shimmer ADK and Alec Iomanner, who are hopefully coming back as improved versions of themselves. Because just like we hope Cam Ward takes a, you know, year one to year two step, we hope the same for Shimmer ADK and Alec Iomanner. So I do think this group is going to be considerably better than it was a year ago. And, you know, you go from being overly reliant on a couple of fourth-round picks to hopefully relying on the fourth overall pick. Yes, he's a rookie, but you expect a lot more from a fourth-round pick, a fourth overall pick, than you do a fourth-round pick. And then you also have a $70 million addition, you know, in Wandale Robinson, who's played for this offensive coordinator before, had 90 catches in back-to-back years for Brian Daboll and topped 1,000 yards last year for the first time. So, yeah, I think this wideout group is going to be much improved, and I'm glad to see it get some national love, some national attention from Ben Solak and ESPN.
You know, when I clicked into this article, the reason I found this article is because I was trying to find Bill Barnwell apparently wrote a piece on the best move and worst move for every team this offseason. I go looking for this article. Usually when your team is mentioned in an article on ESPN, you can just go to that team page on ESPN and the top articles will be there. And sitting at the top, because I didn't realize Bill Barnwell's article was 8 days old, I was actually reading a Marcus Mosher piece on Bill Barnwell's Cowboys moves, which made me curious about what Bill said about the Titans' moves.
That was on Fansided, I imagine, wasn't it? The most sure.
Yes. And then I went to ESPN to find the Bill article, realized it was 8 days ago. At the top of the feed for the Titans was this Ben Solak article, and it's just called Ranking the 10 Best Position Group Upgrades in the NFL or whatever. And when I clicked on that, I was not expecting the Titans wide receivers to be the position group mentioned, because I was expecting the Titans because it was on the Titans team page. I thought he was going to go a totally different direction. I'm curious what you think about this. And I think an argument could be made that this group might belong on that list of top 10. I'm sure Ben didn't want to waste space writing two blurbs about the Titans on a national ESPN article, but the Titans cornerback room might have been a bigger makeover than the wide receiver room even. It might be even more improved if you just look at where they were last year. I know we keep using it as a pejorative to say that Cam Ward was throwing to fourth-round rookies, but let's also acknowledge that those fourth-round rookies played above what anyone expected them to and gave us a lot of like hope and showed a lot of promise for what they can be later in their careers. So to me, the cornerback room going from an absolute disaster of nobodies and backups last year after the top guys got hurt to, you know, the big free agent signings, the potential big second year jump that Marcus Harris could take, you know, Cordell Flott at just 25 years old, coming over who had, you know, his passer rating allowed last year, Justin, was in between Pat Surtain and Devon Witherspoon, two of the best corners in the NFL. Like, Cordell Flott played excellent last year, playing man coverage at a high rate compared to most corners across the league, over 40% of his snaps in man coverage. Like, and again, at just 25 years old, already on his second NFL contract, that's a lot of experience for a young guy who is potentially still ascending. I love what they did in the cornerback room, and I could argue that that is actually the Titans' most upgraded position group.
That's a very good point. I'm not surprised they went with wide receivers because, number one, it tends to generate the most attention, right? Like, it's, you know, catching passes from Cam Ward. It's a sexy position. And then at corner, but of course, $113 million, I think, is the exact number committed to Alante Taylor, Cordell Flott, and Joshua Williams. Now, of course, most of that is to Taylor and Flott. Taylor's contract, 3 years, $58 million, I believe it was, and Flott, 3 years, $45 million. So big numbers to Alante Taylor and Flott, who are going to start on the outside, you know, boundary cornerback in this defense. Certainly, they've done a lot to revamp that room. I think Josh Williams, first guy off the bench. So I can see your argument, but I'm not surprised, nor am I disappointed that they went with wide receivers, because I don't expect anyone nationally to talk about Titans cornerbacks. But if they're going to talk about the Titans nationally, and it doesn't happen often, it's going to be about Cam Ward and what the supporting cast looks like.
Yeah, I agree. And my secret agenda there, Justin, was just to get you to say Joshua Williams again. I think it's the way you say Joshua Williams that people in the chat seem to love. And Ray School points out that Tony Oden is speaking as well, speaking literally right now. So that's another one. That's, what is that, six now position coach press conferences you and I have to go listen to before our next show later today. Justin, let's take our last break. We'll come back. We'll wrap the show up, and we will get in, and then we will set ourselves up to continue the conversation in a few hours after the Titans' second open OTA session. Be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to the closing segment here on this Music City Audible podcast episode. An interesting conversation starter, I would call it, here from Roster Grids, which is, and in the chat has been ongoing carrying out this conversation, so it's clearly something interesting to you guys, so we'll talk about it here. Are you guys taking Bryce Oliver or the field to make the 53 as wide receiver six? Ooh. Roster Grids, the artist formerly known as Iron Grids, says, I'm confidently hammering Oliver. I am too. And I think what gets underrated a lot of the time, and, you know, I think our audience, the Audible Army, this doesn't get underrated for you guys, but, you know, I'm in a bunch of group chats on Twitter that people just add me to. Side note, if you add me to a big Titans group chat on Twitter, odds that I stay in that chat, potentially never really talk, but stay and lurk, are fairly high. So if that interests you to have me in a chat like that, go for it. Anyway, I see people talking about, like, why is Bryce Oliver even, like, why does anyone even talk about Bryce Oliver? Bryce Oliver's never done anything. He's an undrafted guy. Like, can we give the younger guys a chance, like Restrepo or Tyron Montgomery or somebody else a chance? And it's like, I think it often gets underrated by the casual fan how important special teams is. And you and I talk about this all the time, Justin, especially when with regards to roster construction. Bryce Oliver is a special teams ace, and that's why I would be hammering Oliver over the field in this conversation. It has nothing to do with the ability to play wide receiver. It has to do with the limited number of guys that an NFL team can keep on the roster, and that a bunch of those guys have to play special teams, and that Bryce Oliver is one of the guys that you can rely on confidently to play well on special teams.
I agree. I think, obviously, the field is tempting because you've got a guy like Hank Beattie, who they gave a lot of money to. There's Tyron Montgomery, obviously. Everyone's favorite D3 prospect in this draft. But I feel pretty comfortable with Bryce Oliver just because of how much they love him on special teams. And as Iron Grizz just noted, like, he was considered a roster lock weeks before cutdown day last year. Like, I remember not even really wanting to report that he made the team, because I was like, are people going to make fun of me? Because it's like so obvious that he was going to make the team. Like, it was painfully obvious, right? Weeks in advance. I thought it was going to be a question. And then as camp progressed, it wasn't even a question. So I tend to lean Bryce Oliver, if he's healthy, of course.
This is an interesting comment from Jordan Amos 34. And I initially would have agreed with this, but maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe it's like the offseason's too long, or the spring, whatever. Everything's too long. Jordan says, it's going to go : Tate, Wandale, Ridley as starters. Then in order, DK, Iomanner, Oliver. The practice squad and random call-ups with Ty Montgomery, Xavier Restrepo, KJ Osborne. I generally agree with this, but I did find it super notable that unprompted last week, Robert Saleh talked about Elik Iomanner. Was it last week or was it even before that? Whenever he did this.
It was recent. It was recently.
It was somewhat recent. He brings up how Elik Iomanner has been impressive out of nowhere, and he wasn't asked about Elik Iomanner, and I thought that that was potentially noteworthy. Easton has talked a lot about this too, how Elik Iomanner has really bulked up this past offseason heading into this new season, and like some of the concerns that we've had is like this guy's supposed to be in a physical role who sometimes gets pushed around, like he's not as strong and as physical as he should be. Well, apparently he's worked on that this offseason because he's bulked up a lot. He's added muscle, and you would hope that that translates to not getting pushed around so easily and maybe even doing some of the pushing around. And then you think about the roles on this team and how Wandale's going to play the slot primarily. And I know that DK can play Z and slot, but he was most used in the slot for this team last year. And you got Ridley at the Z. You got Carnell Tate, who can play Z and play X. And if you ever want a situation where you want Tate and Iomanner on the field at the same time, Wandale's likely in the slot, or you only have two receivers on the field. Elik's a good blocker at wide receiver as well. And I have started to wonder, and I'm curious what you think, Justin. Like, to me, DK was the best rookie receiver last year. But is there a world where Iomanner actually ends up playing more snaps than him because he's the only other X on the roster, really, after Tate? Do they see Tate as an X ideally? I think they do, but do they also want him to move around? Everyone's going to move around, I think. And so is there a world where Iomanner actually ends up playing more snaps than DK?
I do think there's a world, but I think it's very much up in the air, and it'll depend which guy is more productive because, as you said, there are just so many different personnel possibilities, right? Like, and a lot of it, oddly enough, in my mind, like my answer to this question depends on Calvin Ridley a little bit, because if Ridley's not giving them a lot, like, I think Robinson's going to play the slot so often. They paid him $70 million. He's a slot guy. So where my mind goes is if he's an every down slot guy, there's two possibilities in relation to Iomanner and DK. It's, if Ridley's not giving them a lot, then it's DK at Z. I think DK is more of a Z than a slot, in my personal opinion. I think it's his best fit. So you can just flat out put DK at the Z if Calvin Ridley's not giving you enough or he's hurt or whatever. Or I think you could put Carnell Tate. I actually think Carnell Tate's a better fit at Z than X. I just think the Titans need to play him at X based on everyone else on the roster. But a possibility that I've been ignoring up until now, and I don't know why, it's like, well, if Ridley's not giving them a lot, maybe it's Tate at Z and Iomanner at X, right?
Right.
Like, I think that comes down to who impresses more. Is it Iomanner or is it DK? Flat out, almost like a head-to-head competition, because I think the Titans would be fine either way. If DK's giving them a lot and they have to get him on the field, then he's replacing Ridley at Z. If Io Manor's giving them a lot and they need to get him on the field, then Tate goes to Z and Io Manor goes to X, right? Like, either one, fight for those opportunities kind of thing.
Yeah, and Roster Grids points out here on Tyron Montgomery, if he were to make the initial 53, he would be the first rookie undrafted free agent wide receiver from a D3 school to ever NFL roster at a training camp.
I don't think he's ready.
I'm not going to fact check this. I'm just going to assume that Roster Grids is correct and rely on it, and that's how misinformation spreads. But I don't think Roster Grids is spreading misinformation. I'm just saying, in general, that is how it happens. Justin, Roster Grids had another interesting question here that I wanted to throw up. Which camp battles excite us the most? This is a good way, I think, maybe to close it, and then we can hit some quicker chat questions here. But some of the camp battles that excite me the most, like, I think, I'm not going to say right guard because it's too obvious. I think Io Manor versus DK for wide receiver 4 is a very interesting one. But I think the linebacker battle to me, and maybe it's because of the hook'em bias I have, but Anthony Hill versus Cody Barton for whoever starts next to Cedric Gray at inside linebacker, to me is one of the more fun competitions because I think you're taking like leadership and veteran savvy and communication skills and putting it against like athleticism and youth and playmaking ability, and which one of those is going to win out in training camp. And you've said that you think Anthony Hill is going to be a day one starter. I would love to believe that. I think realistically what we see is Cody Barton starts week one, no matter how training camp goes. And Anthony Hill plays. And I think the rotation philosophy that Saleh is deploying on the D-line, like maybe not to the same extreme, but I think you'll see that at most positions on the roster. When you talk about receiver and you have guys like DK and Io Manor that you want to get some snaps, and you talk about having a guy like Anthony Hill Jr. that is the only way he's going to get better and or prove he's ready to play in the NFL is to go out on the field and try to show it. Kevin Winston Jr. and Tony Adams and anyone else that's in the safety room, if an undrafted free agent like Bishop Fitzgerald make the roster or whatever, like that, there could be a rotation there too. So anyway, I think that it starts off week one, Barton starts, but Hill plays a little bit. And over like the first month of the season, you'll have like Barton snaps up here and Hill snaps up here. And throughout that first month, it's just going to do this. And eventually Hill will be playing the majority of the snaps. But that, if I had to pick one camp battle that excites me the most, it's that one.
Yeah, I'm like, obviously right guard is probably the biggest one on the roster, like Jackson Slater versus Cordell Volson. But like how the reps shake out at wide receiver, how they shake out at linebacker, like what you just mentioned. I think for me, backup cornerback, like as much as I'm expecting Joshua Williams to be the number one option off the bench, but maybe, you know, a Latrell McCutcheon, UDFA, a Micah Robinson, like who pushes them for roles? Tony Adams, Bishop Fitzgerald, that backup, you know, number three nickel safety, whatever you want to call it. There's just a lot of position battles. I know Ike Hillard, like everyone spoke, Dave Borgonzi.
Yes.
Also the nickel coach. So obviously every single position. I knew immediately what your reaction was. I could tell right away. It was the linebacker coach, nickel coach. Everyone's talking.
Yeah, Dalton Hilliard, the nickels coach. Dave Borgonzi, the linebackers coach. My goodness, we could spend a month breaking down all these press conferences, Justin, which we might have to because we're not going to hear from anybody regarding this team until June 8th.
I mean, is that it? That's the next OTA practice. Do we hear from them on June 8th? For sure. I don't know.
Might be a closed
session, right? We'll find out in June. But I think, is that going to do it for today's?
Let's hit a couple little chats here and then we will. Jabba Chunk says, y'all should be calling the double live show two-a-days. Love that. And we're immediately implementing that. We're doing a two-a-day today, Justin. We got two-a-days today. Second show coming later. I just wanted to point out this comment from 2252 Nemesis. Another thing I'm thankful for is how humble and team-friendly our players are. JJ McCarthy's comments would make me feel rough if I was a Vikings fan. We got nothing like that here. High characters. And that's a shout-out to Mike Borgonzi in being very intentional with the kind of people he's brought into this locker room. And you see that reflected almost all the time. Justin, do you want to take this one, also from 2252 Nemesis, who is unfamiliar with the receiver terminology? What does Z and X mean?
Oh, yeah, interesting question. I mean, X receiver, I want you to think of your prototypical outside boundary guy. Think what DeAndre Hopkins played here. Think Calvin Johnson, AJ Green, like your big outside receivers, often isolated one-on-one, a lot of press man coverage on the opposite side. The Z position, a little behind the line of scrimmage, a little right often. You kind of try to hide it from press man. Think of what Calvin Ridley has played a lot for the Titans. I don't know if that helps break it down for you. That's probably the simplest way I can put it.
Yeah, X
receiver. Sometimes Z is also called flanker. I know that's probably not going to help you, but it's kind of interchangeable terms, Z or flanker. There at X, I think X, you've probably got it down when I talk about like a DeAndre Hopkins or an AJ Green.
Right. It's a player that's, they call it tethered to the line of scrimmage. That means that player doesn't go in motion a lot. It depends on how you line up your offense, but you know, NFL rules dictate that if a player is up on the line of scrimmage, that player can't go in motion unless he like takes a step back and somebody else gets attached to the line of scrimmage, and then that guy could go in motion. And so that's why they're open to press man coverage more, because they're right up on the line. They're not 3 yards back or whatever. And so that player has to be able to beat press man coverage in order to play X effectively. Whereas the Z, you know, somebody has to be off the line. Again, NFL rules require that you can only have a certain number of guys on the line of scrimmage. So the guy that's off the line will often go in motion because they can, and that, you know, prevents them from hitting press man coverage because they sometimes they're in motion at the snap, or just the fact that they're moving and that they're far off the line of scrimmage, like you can't jam them as easily. So usually you put your speedier or quicker or shiftier players there that maybe aren't as good or as physical at beating press man coverage. And that's, I think, the biggest difference. They're both outside receiver positions, but very different roles. We got a Tombo Brewster super chat, Justin. Oh my goodness gracious. And this is the end, so we can answer it now. He says, have a good weekend, gents. Don't answer this till the end, but is Melo taking PSG or Arsenal this weekend? And then I'll let you handle whatever the parenthetical is.
Allez les Blues. Clearly he's talking about PSG there. Paris Saint-Germain, the Champions League final tomorrow afternoon, 12 Eastern. I'm so excited about it. Tombo, you should know if you don't by now, I'm a diehard Portuguese fan. I'm Portuguese, so I'm a diehard Portuguese national team supporter. I'm obviously, not only do I hate Arsenal, one of my best friends is an Arsenal fan, and he's so annoying in the most fun way possible that we always give him slack for Arsenal. So I'm not only am I rooting against him, but I'm rooting for Nuno Mendes, Vitinha, João Neves and Gonçalo Ramos, the four Portuguese internationals on PSG. But what we're rooting for above all, Tombo, is that none of those guys get hurt before the World Cup. I'm going to be in shambles tomorrow. Shambles. If Vitinha, João Neves or Nuno Mendes get hurt in that game, I will be clenching. It's the finals, the last club game of the year. I was almost rooting they wouldn't make it there because I'm like, I don't want these guys to get hurt. But I'm rooting for PSG, but above all, I'm rooting for no injuries to those very, very important Portuguese players.
Yes, good for anyone who cares about soccer. Justin, I am glad you got a chance to have that conversation. I am not one of the people who cares about soccer. All right, that's going to do it for this first of our two-a-day live stream. Well, is the second one going to be live? Should we clarify that really quickly on air right now for our audience?
Absolutely.
We're going to do it live, right?
Why would you want to take the time to edit it and not get it up right away? We want to react to practice. It's going to be live. It's going to be live.
Hell
we'll
yeah.
Be back later today for a second live episode.
Love that. So until then, make sure you like this video. Again, subscribe to the channel. I'm about to end the stream, so hang out. I see the number of people in this stream dropping. It was at 130 10 seconds ago. It's at 116. Hang out and leave a comment. There's 100 now 120 of you in here. In the next 5 minutes, there should be 120 comments on this episode. We're counting on you. Don't let us down. Appreciate everyone for tuning in. We'll be back later today, time TBD. So make sure you're subscribed and have channel alerts turned on so you get a notification when we're live again.
It's not going to be late. You can figure like once we're getting notes from practice and practice is wrapped up, it's not going to be a late night stream. As soon as we've got enough notes from practice to come back live, it'll be then. So it'll be very soon once we start getting those practice notes. Until later today, when you return for our two-a-days, this is like the dog days of training camp. We're putting the pads on for a second practice. Y'all stay safe out there. See you in an hour or two and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.